Support for This Day in Esoteric Political History comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between. And they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/thisday. That's odoo.com/thisday. Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. This day, January 21st, 1861, an incredibly tense day in the U.S. Capitol. One observer talked about how they had sensed, quote, blood in the air as the Senate came to order. And the reason was that this was the day that five Southern senators would give their farewell address. This culminated in remarks by Mississippi's Jefferson Davis, the acknowledged leader of the South in Congress. Davis would, of course, on this day announce that Mississippi was seceding to join the Confederacy. He would go on to become president of the Confederate States of America from 1861 to 1865. So here to discuss that moment in the Capitol, Jefferson Davis's speech, and a little bit of Jefferson Davis himself is, as always, Nicole Hemmer of Columbia. Hello, Nikki.
Hello, Jody.
And Kelly Carter Jackson of Wellesley. Hello, Kelly.
Hi.
Nikki, you know, I will say that in reading the accounts of this speech, it's just an incredibly riveting moment. It's like really emotional and fraught. And, you know, maybe I should have expected as such, given that it's about the country tearing itself apart. But I wonder if we can just start there. Can you talk a little bit about like what we know about what it was like inside the Capitol at that moment leading up to Davis's speech?
Yeah, so the Congress was in session and the Senate actually postponed a vote on admitting Kansas as a free state in order to make room for these speeches. And so that's kind of the context that's overshadowing all of this, that as we've talked about before, in the 1850s, Kansas was known as Bleeding Kansas because it was the place where a kind of small civil war had already broken out between people who supported slavery and people who did not. And that fight had kind of come to a close by 1861, and we were moving toward a war that engulfed the entire nation. But that fight hadn't broken out just yet. Abraham Lincoln had been elected in November, and a couple of states had already seceded, and now these senators were coming in to the Senate to say because they are no longer part of the Union, they can no longer sit in the U.S. Senate. And those are the speeches that were made that day, culminating with Jefferson Davis's speech, where he basically just says, you know, we have the right to secede. I'm out of here. See you later.
I will say that the speech that Jefferson Davis gives is not very long. It's only 6 minutes. But it's a powerful speech in that it's transformative what happens after that. And I think, you know, I don't think anyone was anticipating that Jefferson Davis would actually make good on, you know, his ideas. For a long time, he had said that he believed in secession, but no one thought that he might be actually willing to do it. And so giving this speech in that kind of way and then making his exit was quite powerful.
Yeah. And, you know, I will say that in doing this, it evoked the images that we saw inside the Capitol on January 6th of this year. Just, you know, this sort of blood in the air, as someone put it at the time. And then senators having to get up and speak to the moment and either rise to the occasion or shirk or, you know, do what they do. But in many ways, it comes down and is refracted through, you know, a bunch of powerful elites inside a room, you know, choosing their words wisely or unwisely. You know, the interesting thing about Davis and this announcement, along with five others that he's leaving, is what comes immediately next. No one really knows. And it's another one of these moments where it's just like they're beyond the rule book at this point. And people don't really react in real time to the speech. No one really knows what happens. And they just sort of decide to let them walk out. And you think of, Kelly, the Civil War and secession and all this stuff as like this fracture and, you know, this ejection and whatever. But this was just kind of like five people sort of slowly ambling out of the Capitol and then the country having to figure out what exactly that meant.
And it's not, you know, I tell my students all the time, the Civil War is not inevitable. You know, I think we think that we're almost expecting for it to happen. Like there's a time and a day and then that happens. But it's a long, windy road. And there are many of times that the Civil War could have happened 5 years earlier, a couple decades earlier. There are so many pivotal moments that sort of bring the country to a halt economically and politically over slavery that no one was quite clear what the ramifications or consequences would be. But it definitely shows that, you know, for someone like Jefferson Davis, it's really, really important to understand the economic context behind him. He's coming from the state of Mississippi. He owns 113 slaves himself. Mississippi is one of the most lucrative states in the country. In about 1840, Louisiana and Mississippi, the national bank assets draw 40% of their wealth from those two states. Mississippi holds on to slavery the longest, and it's the most profitable and almost becomes later the poorest state as a result of that because of its grip on the institution of slavery. But it's just remarkable to see how Jefferson Davis becomes a leader in the Confederacy after this.
Yeah, and I think that what's so striking about that scene on the floor of the Senate is it's the embodiment of what's happening politically in the country, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard to imagine states seceding because nothing really changes except potentially a political status. And I say potentially because it's whether you recognize secession as legal or not. But here you have the people who represent those states walking out. And you have somebody like Jefferson Davis, who is, you know, Jody, you mentioned that these were the elite actors. It wasn't just that he was a senator that made him elite. I mean, he was someone who moved in all sorts of elite circles. He had been the Secretary of War. He had married Zachary Taylor's daughter, Zachary Taylor, who would later go on to become the President of the United States. And he, as Kelly was saying, was vested in a considerable amount of wealth because he enslaved people. And so here's somebody who embodies the wealth and the political elite of Mississippi, and he is removing himself bodily from this chamber. And so it gives people an event, a moment to hold on to that represents the tearing apart of the nation that's happening in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, that picture of this group of men, all men at this point, who, you know each other and have a history together. I mean, you hear that cliche about the Civil War that it was like brother versus brother who had to fight each other on the battlefield. But, you know, it's also like within the Senate, these were people who all went to West Point together. And they, you know, again, had these ties and they were kind of maybe had more in common than apart in many ways. Davis later described what he called his unutterable grief at giving this speech. And he called it the saddest day of his life. And I don't want to, you know, like provide too much empathy for Jefferson Davis here, but it is a reminder that these are like people who know each other and have bonds and are operating as like real human beings as much as they are kind of statesmen. We saw that earlier this month, and I feel a little conflicted about it. But you see like Lindsey Graham get up there and talk about the friendships he has and the bonds he has, but I'm still going to stab you in the back, or I'm still going to take this stand or whatever. And it's just like this weird thing. That's my conclusion. It's very weird to me.
Yeah, I'm curious, Kelly, what you think about this, because also when I read those lines that it was the saddest speech of his life, I mean, maybe, but maybe that's also propaganda about how we've been forced into this terrible position that we never wanted to take, but now you've elected Abraham Lincoln, so we have to do it.
We've romanticized. I mean, so much of the lost cause in the Confederacy has been romanticized. I mean, we look back at it. Well, some people look back at it longingly. You know, if we think of like, you know, pop culture and like Gone with the Wind and all of these like iconic ideas of what this moment represented. But I think it's worse, you know, going back again to sort of the economic context. Jefferson would have never been so empowered to think he could do this if he didn't believe that he had an economic leg to stand on, if he didn't believe that Mississippi could form and function outside of the United States. And so for me, that's always the underlining point, is not just how he's able to maneuver power, but how he's able to wield the enormous amount of wealth that's coming on behalf of enslaved labor to make these decisions, to be emboldened to make these decisions. He feels in some way protected by his stance because of the amount of wealth that the institution has built up for the country. He feels maybe saddened by it, but also safe.
Yeah, yeah. To add to this picture of him covering himself or giving himself cover, and you know, he talks about how his words that day were, quote, not my utterances, but rather leaves torn from the book of fate, you know. And I think that whenever you hear a politician talk about how they don't really have agency, they're simply just actors in a sort of historical stream, it's probably a red flag, especially since in that very same speech, as you said, Kelly, it was only 6 minutes. But he does then say also that, you know, the founders of this country didn't truly believe in the equality of men and that slavery should be able to continue. So it's like, which words do you choose to hear from Jefferson Davis in that moment?
Yeah. And one of the reasons that he becomes the president of the Confederacy is because he is known as such a stalwart defender of enslavement. Like that's his thing that he's known for. And it's the thing that continues to empower him after secession by, you know, becoming the, even though he wanted to become a general or whatever, but that he would become the president of this Confederacy because he knew what the Confederacy was about. It was about holding on to slavery.
As we start to wrap up here, I mean, I bet you we'll do something, some other segments that touch on Jefferson Davis. But Kelly, do you want to say anything about him and, you know, the next part of his career? What's interesting to you about Jefferson Davis?
It's interesting to me is that Jefferson Davis is still not well liked. He's always picking fights and getting into it with his comrades and always finding ways to dispute over different things. And so while I think our public memory can look back and have some sort of nostalgia for people in that contemporary moment, you know, his relationship to other politicians and those within the Confederacy is fraught, and that people saw Robert E. Lee as more of a leader than they did Jefferson Davis. And I think he resented that for sure.
Yeah, he fought a lot with his vice president, Alexander Stevens. You know, the thing that sticks out to me about Davis that I've been thinking about a lot lately is that he goes to prison after the war and he spends 2 years in prison, and ultimately Andrew Johnson pardons him. And so they just kind of begin the process of sweeping the Civil War under the rug by not holding the people who conducted war against them accountable for their actions. And I think as we're thinking about the poison pills of unity in the aftermath of the Civil War, this was one step in that process.
The 2 years in prison just like, it always so baffles bad. My mind because I'm just kind of like, really? That's it?
All in the name of unity.
Prison back then was kind of cushy too, right?
Wait, what?
I set him up in an apartment. Well, so I always flinch at this because it's actually how prison should be. I mean, at first he was held in pretty rotten conditions, which was common at the end of the war. But then he's eventually like upgraded to officer's quarters and he's with his family. So he's imprisoned.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. We should find a hook for that. All right. Well, I think we'll end it there. Nicole Hemmer, thanks to you as always.
Thank you, Jody.
And Kelly Carter Jackson, thanks to you.
Thank you.
This Day in Esoteric Political History is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a network of independent, listener-supported, artist-owned podcasts. Our researcher and producer is Jacob Feldman. Our producer is Brittany Brown. Get in touch with us. There's a form at thisdaypod.com. You can also email us, thisdaypod@gmail.com. We love comments about the show, ideas that it sparks, ideas for future episodes. We've got a big list and we're adding to it, so please get in touch, thisdaypod@gmail.com or on social media at thisdaypod. My name is Jody Avergan. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Radiotopia.